This is the When We Relate podcast with your host, Will Fleming.
This podcast is a place for regular folks like you and me to talk about life, music, entertainment, faith, sports, and everything in between. The purpose is simple: to show the world that the more we talk, the more we all see how much we actually relate in different ways.
Yes. Once again, thank you guys for joining Facebook Live / podcast version of When We Relate podcast. I am your host, Mr. Will Inspire. I am joined by none other than Q. Q, introduce yourself, my guy.
You, Quentin Max. Hello, everybody. Welcome back again. Always good to be here.
Absolutely. And on the show today, we got a very, very, very special guest. She goes by Miss Tatiana Renee. Is it Renee? Because I see a lot of Renees. I want to make sure. Renee.
Yeah, you know, it's Renee. It's Renee.
Okay. We joined by none other than Tatiana Renee. How are you doing, sister?
Good. How are you?
I am doing great. We will go ahead and get started. First and foremost, we appreciate you joining us.
Absolutely.
Q, won't y'all go ahead and like explain y'all relationship? Because what's interesting is Q told me about you, Tatiana, about, I want to say about a month ago, it feels like. And he was like, yo, we got to bring her on the show. She's super dope, extra dope. She got a book going on. I started doing my own research and I was like, bro, let's do it. So how did you and Q meet? What's the relationship there?
We met in college, actually. He's married to my best friend.
Word.
So I had her first, but I'm
true. Kidding. That's true. That's why she had to jump on me. I had to fight.
Yeah, wow. So that's how we know each other.
Yeah, nice. So, man, when the word started circulating, Tati, when you started circulating, oh, by the way, Tatiana Renee, we call her Tati. That's what she goes by as well. But once Tati started circulating the fact that she had written a book, as you can see behind me, she had written a book. That was right in the beginning phases of When We Relate podcast as well. So I was like, that's the perfect thing, a platform that we could talk about it and kind of, you know, talk to you, get you a little bit of a more of a platform for you to discuss who you are, to talk about the book, get people to let, you know, kind of know who you are, things like that. So that's why I brought it to Will. And from there, you did the wonderful Q&A. That's going to be kind of similar to what we're doing now. And so hopefully it's just another way to give the book legs. I have read the book. I would show it to you, but I bet you it would not show up with the background. But I have the book right here next to me. It's a wonderful book. I bet you, Tati, you had no idea I talked to you, talk about you like this behind your back, right? Right?
I did not.
Yeah. So, no, man, this is my kid's godmother. This is a wonderful and godly made woman. She is an author. She is a nurturer to a lot of young people, to a lot of people in general. Her mama is one of my favorite people in the world. That's just a separate aside. But this is Tatiana Renee.
Well,
thank you.
I am honored to meet you. When Q introduced me to somebody, I know it's big time. My man is like this close with Michael Jordan and the late great Kobe Bryant. So I only knew he was going to bring greatness on the show. But listen, we'll dive right into it. We got some viewers here, and I'm sure some of your people are watching. So why don't you get started with kind of introducing yourself? You introduce your relationship with Q, but introduce yourself. What do you do specifically? We'll get into the book and everything, but for new viewers who this is their first time listening, who is Tatiana?
So I'm Tatiana. I live in Portland. And for work right now, I am an after-school programming manager. And then other than that, I'm really involved in my church. I used to run a dance team there, but now I'm one of the youth leaders. And then, yeah, I just hang out, chill, write books.
Casually write books and stuff.
Casually write books, right.
I also really like fashion, so I sew sometimes. Jack of all trades. I just do a lot of everything.
Word. Speaking of fashion, let's talk about the jacket.
Let's talk about the jacket.
Just pivot a little. Just show me a little of the, like.
Oh, ooh, I don't know. Can you see this? It's like newspapers on there or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe you're right. Maybe I can't pull it off because I ordered one, but maybe I can't.
I don't think so. Nice try, though.
Okay. Well, thank you for the intro. Anything else that you kind of like to sprinkle in about yourself? Anything else you want to let the people know about you, or you want to jump straight into the book?
No, we can get straight to the book.
Okay. Well, like I said, I have read the book. I let my wife be the liaison for the Q&A because we only got like one invite and I didn't want to like double dip, so it's fine. But I have looked into the book. So before we get into the pages specifically, I just want to know what made you want to write a book, and then what made you want to write this book specifically? Like, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. So the reason that I wrote a book is the reason why I wrote this book. So I wrote this book specifically because I was going through a breakup, and I had read a few books that I thought would help me process through everything, but they just weren't getting to where I needed them to go. It wasn't enough. There wasn't enough meat in them to help me process through everything. And so I decided to write this book because I thought it was important for people to see what a waiting season is while the person's already going through it, as opposed to it being over and you talking back about what you went through. I feel like it's more helpful when you're going through the process as you're writing the book, because then people believe more so what you're saying and understand exactly the point that you're at, because they're in the same spot, if that makes sense. So that's why I wrote this book and a book.
Gotcha. So it's kind of like hindsight is 20/20, so you wanted to do it more in the moment.
Yes.
I understand. Okay, have you written anything before, or like book-wise?
No, I have not written anything before this ever. Other than college papers and essays.
Right, essays.
Hey, but that counts low-key.
I have the link. I believe the link to the book is tagged in a couple of the posts that I put up, but that's impressive that this is your first book. I would definitely implore anybody to go check it out. It does not feel like a first, like a first book, a first production. So I applaud you on that. Would you have something?
No, I think you're hitting it right on the nail. And I think you mentioned, not doing anything outside of like a college essay. But I found what's interesting for a lot of writers, it kind of starts in school. Like a lot of authors say, yeah, I kind of started in school. Like it just kind of naturally happened. I think even for someone like myself and Q, you could probably attest to this, right? Being artists, and that's neither here or there, but us being artists, I would say a lot of that came from just being in school and like naturally having to write papers and being like, oh, I can try to put words together. So I think it's always interesting to hear when authors just say, I don't know where it came from. It was just there. I just wrote it, right? And especially such a wonderful book like yourself.
Absolutely.
So Q, you can pick up where you left off. I'm sorry, brother.
Yeah, no. So just kind of going back to that, did you run into like any obstacles with this being your first book? I mean, because like I said, it's wonderfully written. So to feel like you were able to just crank this out is impressive. Like what was the process like?
Well, it took me around a year and a half, because I started writing it and then stopped. Mm. And then once quarantine happened, I was like, there's really no reason for me not to finish this
book.
And so I put a deadline on myself, and I was like, by my birthday, when I turn 29, I want this book to be done and out, ready to be sold. Because I feel like I don't want to keep procrastinating. I feel like there's something that in the book that I feel like people want to, people need.
I agree.
And so I didn't run into many obstacles other than the fact that they're my actual journal entries. So I had to go back and reread a lot of things that I was experiencing at the time. So that part was a little bit hard to try and maneuver through those feelings. Because while I'm still in a waiting period, I'm not necessarily in that waiting period anymore. And so going back and rereading all of the feelings that I had during that time was a little interesting and hard. Right. But other than that, I didn't hit any snag or anything along the way. It was pretty smooth, pretty easy process.
Okay. So I'm glad you said that. So that means the next one you write is going to be just as easy, right?
Yeah. We'll see if there is the next one.
Wait, what? Right here, she committed to writing a second book on the When We Relate podcast.
The way
I did not commit. I didn't commit. I just said if there is a second one,
it's an exclusive. Okay, that's good. I said give us an exclusive. So when is next time this? If it does happen again, maybe we have you back. Maybe you announce it on here. I don't know. It's if you want to.
The wait part two. That's all I'm gonna say.
Go ahead.
The wait part two. That's it.
Right? Hey, keep on waiting. I should stay out of it. Okay. So going a little bit deeper into the book, give the people a little bit of, I guess, a synopsis of the book. Obviously, the wait is a waiting period, but also an acronym. The one all is tested and whatnot. Like, give us an overview of kind of like what that means and what that means to you.
So at the time, I didn't really have a word for what that period was, but I feel like at some point in our lives, we all go through a season where nothing is really happening. There's nothing good happening, but there's not necessarily anything bad happening. You're just kind of in a limbo area and you're trying to figure out, okay, so what do I do next? What's the next steps? What are the next, what's the next season of my life that I'm supposed to be entering in? And you're kind of in this place where you're just praying and you're just asking God, what is it that you want me to learn during this time? And I feel like a lot of times we don't ever know exactly what that period was. And so I was you're just sitting there waiting for what you're supposed to be doing next. You're waiting for your next assignment almost. And so I was like, that makes more sense to call it a waiting season as opposed to just, oh, I'm in a season of my life where I'm in limbo. Right. What does that look like? And I always go back to the story of Jesus when he was tempted in the for those three times by the devil, and how all those things were happening in that time that he was waiting on God's
next direction.
And all those things were happening, and how we get tempted in those times where we feel like, okay, well, I don't have any answer from God. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. So we make our own decisions and we try and, do what we can based off of what we feel like should be going on. And I think Jesus was a prime example where he never swayed from what he knew he was supposed to be doing. And even though God didn't tell him where to go next, he knew what he was supposed to be doing was to sit there and wait for the next direction.
Come on.
And so I think I always think about that. I need to sit and just wait and not tell God what it is I want him to do next or try and figure out what it is that I have to do next.
Come on.
That's what the whole idea of the waiting season is and how it came about as I was writing the book.
I like that. Elaborate.
That's incredible. Deep. Wow.
Profound.
Better preach, girl. Listen. Hey, I think that's big. Not to interrupt at all, but I think that's huge what you just mentioned. Like really, really, truly waiting. And I'd love to hear your take on this in terms of maybe someone out there that's unclear if God is really telling them to make that next move, right? So, right now we're in this season of everybody's in the same position of being quarantined. Everybody's in the same position of, what's next, right? Everyone's pretty much, it's the first time in history, in my opinion, where everyone's kind of in the same position. No matter where you left off last when quarantine stopped or started, we're in some ways in the same position. So what do you tell that person that's in this position right now, that's ready to make a move, but either A, don't feel like they have the, number one, the calling from God to make that next move. Number two, the resources from God to make that next move. And number three, the support, not from God specifically, but just the support from who they think they need the support from in order to validate that next move. What would you tell that person?
So I always equate this whole, well, if you, obviously you guys read the book, so I talk about David a lot.
Yes.
And if you look at the story of David during that whole 15-year period, it wasn't necessarily that he sat there and waited for his next season. He knew exactly the things that he was supposed to do, so he followed what he was supposed to do. He didn't stay in one spot. Like, he didn't say, okay, well, God told me at this spot that I'm supposed to be anointed king, so I'm going to sit here for the 15 years until it's time for me to go into the next thing. No, there are still things in your waiting season that you're supposed to accomplish, and you have to figure out what those things are. You can't just sit there and wait for the next season to come in because you're not learning the next tools. You're not being prepared for the next season. And because David didn't wait, he sat there and waited, but he also did what it was that he was supposed to do. When he became king, he had already knew what it meant to be a king because he had led an army. He had fought off a giant. Like, he did all of these things before he became king. So when he became king, he knew what it meant to be a good king. So I think that a lot of times we take it as, oh, well, if I'm in this season, I have to sit here and wait for God to tell me what I'm supposed to do next, which, yes, that's true. But he never said that you have to sit and wait. Mm-hmm. You can move and wait at the same time.
Right. Mm-hmm. Wow. You can move and wait at the same time. Wow. That's a bar.
It's a great distinction because I definitely did not think of that before cracking the book open. And for those of you that are going to be getting the book, again, it's been linked. That starts around page 8, talking about David's waiting period, by the way. But I think that's super dope. Productive waiting. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. What are we going to do? What are we going to do while waiting? I think that's the difference between the most successful and the most happy and the most, I guess you could, for lack of a better word, productive people, the people that crack open their textbook while waiting for the bus, or the people that, you know, that listen to their audiobooks on their commute. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're not real, like, you're moving, but you're not really transitioning necessarily out of your waiting period, but you are also being productive. And I also think, like, the parallel that you drew to being able to sharpen your sword and being able to be better prepared for whatever the next season is. Do you think, just kind of piggybacking off of that, do you think that it's easy, or do you think it's normally clear what the next season will be, or what, like, talents, or like, what things you're being taught, or like what ways that you need to, what things you need to sharpen up on, like, in your waiting period? Are those things usually clear, or do you just, does the Lord kind of position you to where you need to be?
I think it depends on your relationship with God and how clear you understand Him. I think sometimes that even means that in your waiting season, you need to learn what it means to listen and hear God's voice and distinguish between your voice and His and what that means. Mm-hmm. I think that I don't always think that it's easy to figure out what tools and stuff you're or what you're supposed to be learning from the certain things that you're going through. Mm-hmm. But I think once you get to that next season, when you end up using all those tools, you think back like, oh, there it is. That's why I needed to go through this season. This is why I needed to learn this specific thing, because I was getting ready for this specific place right here. So I think it depends on how your relationship is with God. Can you actually understand and hear Him clearly, or are you speaking into your own self about what you feel like things should happen? And is your heart right? Like, is your heart and your spirit and your soul, is it right? And is it in alignment with God? Because that is where you can get tripped up knowing if it's easy or not.
Come on. Talk about it. That's so important. That's so important, especially for our generation. Lord have mercy. We be ready to move. Like, we don't need any validation. <We're lying. laughs> And I think it may do with the Twitter culture. Twitter culture is that's a new word. Twitter culture. That's a new word. I think it has to do with how our generation kind of looks at being quote unquote still or are kind of just in the same spot. Like, I think a lot of us, and it's funny, and not to throw my little brother out there, but he's going through the same thing, 19 years old. And he felt like at 19, he feels like that he's behind on life. And he didn't say those exact words, but I think it's just the reason I say it is because I think it's just what's the word I'm looking for? I think it's just something that our generation makes, puts a little bit too much effort on, that if you ain't moving, that you ain't doing nothing. And that's, we all know as adults now that that's far from true. We can't wait to take a nap. Right. Like, I can't wait not to not have nothing to do. But I think because that's where we come from. Like, we come from high school. We come from college where everything's rapidly moving. Test here. Study for that. Frat party later. Football game later. Basketball game. You know, all these different things. Mm-hmm. And like, then you get thrown into the real world and you're being forced to slow down, whatever that means. So. I hope I didn't go super left there, but this is hidden. This is hidden.
Don't pull it back.
Pull it back.
So thank you for that. I think that's the reason why this book is really important. It's a great read, but it's also very applicable. You can definitely pull things from this book and make it super personal to you, to the reader, even so much as to have those journal entries, which I like so much in the book. There, if once you pick up the book, you'll see that there are actually places where you can journal and answer questions from the author, from Tati, that can make it even more applicable, even more personal to you. When you decided to add those journal entries into the book, number one, I guess, what made you decide to add those journal entries? And number two, how do you feel about the fact that you may not get to obviously see or get to know anything about what's being written there? Do you want to know? Like, would you love to see kind of what people are writing in those entries, or how do you feel about that?
Well, to answer your first question, I was not going to put none of my entries into this.
Really? Book. You're so good.
I did not want to do that. But I was talking to my god sister one day and she suggested it. And I was just like, oh yeah, Bree.
I don't know if she's her name on here.
But she suggested it and I was like, I'm not sure about that. I didn't really want people to know like what I was really feeling and what I was going through at that time, because I just felt like it was just so personal to me. And during that time, I was so private about how I felt that nobody ever knew how I was really feeling unless they were close to me and I made phone calls, you know? And so I was just like, I don't want people to really know like that side of me. Like, I feel that makes me like super, super vulnerable. And I don't know if I was ready for that. But I ended up doing it because I thought that it would be more impactful if people got to read my actual words of what I was going through. Because like I said, sometimes, especially with like the millennial culture and or the millennial age and the Gen Zers coming up, they need personal experience to actually understand what you're talking about.
Amen.
Because I know for myself, if you ain't went through it, I'm not listening to you.
Facts.
Because you can't relate.
Page three, by the way.
My point,
you can't relate to me. You can't tell me what I'm going through because you yourself have not been through that exact thing. You haven't been through that situation. And so I thought it was important to put my journal entries in so people who are reading it know that I'm not joking when I say that I went through this. I'm not trying to pull a curtain over your face. I'm very serious when I said I went through these things. This is exactly how I was feeling. These journals are really from my journal. Like, I can pull up my journal and show you guys. Like, they're really out of my journal, my personal journal. And I want people to know, like, this is real. Like, it's not, I'm not faking. So you really can relate to me in that way. And I think that journaling is really personal to the person. I would like to hear what people are
saying. I thought so.
About some of the entries, because I think I spent a lot of time trying to figure out what questions I wanted to ask to get people to kind of interact with the book. But I would be interested to hear, like, what people are writing there. But I also know that journaling is very private, and sometimes people just don't want to share. But if you guys do want to share, look me up on Instagram. We can have a talk. We can have a conversation. I would love it. But yeah.
Okay. So we are on Facebook Live, bro. So why not just take a look at one of these journal prompts and see if anybody wants to, I don't know, just like drop a comment or anything like that. There are people watching. I'm sure these people that are watching have probably gotten the book as well. So journal prompt, and this is page 44. Have you had a relationship that taught you something about yourself when it ended? How did you feel? Were you able to own your feelings and let it go? Let it go.
Just let it go.
That's deep. That's deep. That's deep. I mean, hey, I love the journal entries. Everybody watching, please, if you want to drop a comment in there and kind of elaborate on that, please do. Grab the book and write the journal entries in the book as well. So going and kind of diving a little bit deeper into those journal entries, when you were writing those journal entries, you wrote them all, if I'm not mistaken, you wrote them to God specifically, correct?
Correct.
Is that something that you've always done? Is that something that you just started to do? Like, why are you only to God? Like, that's not something that I had ever seen with journaling before.
Mostly because they were prayers. So I don't pray. I pray out loud, but I find it really hard to express exactly what I want to say when I'm praying. And I don't know, a lot of people know me, and sometimes I just keep it real with God, and I will sit there and tell him, like, bro, you're tripping right now. Why are you doing this to me? I don't understand. I don't get it. But sometimes I just have a really hard time, like, actually getting those words that I want to formulate. And so writing it down made it easier for me. And that's why they all just was like, you know, dear God, or God, this is what I'm going through, or whatever the case may be. It was a prayer to him. There are some entries that I didn't put in the book that are to people if I was mad or at the time or whatever the case may be. But most of the time it's to God, because it's a prayer about what I'm going through and how to help the situation.
I understand.
Yeah.
Okay. So kind of continuing on with the journal entries, I know some of them started off a little bit, I guess you could say, disgruntled, I guess, for lack of a better word. Like, you were not in the happiest of place when those things happen. Talk to me a little bit about the process of how journaling made you feel better, how therapeutic it was for you, and the enlightenment, or like what changed when your attitude changed while writing these journal entries.
When I was younger, people would always tell me that when you hold your feelings in, it's not very good for you. And like, sometimes it would make you like physically sick, like physically, because you're holding in so many feelings. And I remember when I was younger, I used to be so bitter about the situation with my dad. I love my dad so much. I do. But when I was younger, you know, we were kind of at odds, and I was upset. And so I was really bitter all the time, and would get sick a lot. So in my head, I equated like, oh man, like I'm getting sick. It's because I'm bitter. I need to do something. And so I feel like journaling allows you to immediately get what those feelings are out as soon as possible. And sometimes, like I always tell my friends, if you got to write it down and burn it afterwards, do that if that makes you feel better. But it's important to get those feelings out. And sometimes we don't feel comfortable going to a therapist or a psychologist or whatever the case may be, or we don't want to talk it out with other people because it's personal, it's private, or it's just so private that we don't even want to tell our closest friends. But write it down, like write it out, get it out of your head so that way you don't have to, you don't have all these feelings like bogging you down. Because sometimes you can get physically sick. Your mental health is like really unstable because you're thinking of all these things that are happening or all these feelings that you're feeling and you have no outlet. That's and so right. I journal because it gives me an outlet to get everything out of my head out. And I feel like it's helped me grow as I've done it more because it allows me to be more positive and not think of all the negative things because it's all down on paper. Right. It's all out of my head. I've written it down. I physically wrote it down. And sometimes, like, I would always think, oh, maybe I should type it in my phone or type it on my computer instead. But I found that when I actually physically write it down, like, I have tendonitis in my hands. And once it starts to hurt, then I know, like, I got it all out. Yeah. I got everything out I need to get out. My hand is hurting. I'm good. And now I can move on. And even though it still hurts me and those feelings are still there, it's not as intensified as it was when it first happened. And now I can actually think positive to combat those negative thoughts. And everything's out on paper.
Okay.
And I burned it afterwards. If you need to burn it, burn it. If you need to throw it away, do that. Like, whatever it is you need to do. But at least you got it out of your head.
Hey, that's real. Tatiana, I want to ask
you. You got something, bro?
Yeah, I want to jump in real quick and ask you this. As you were talking, and kind of that feeling you have when you're putting it down on paper, right, just getting it out of you. How do you feel, and this is kind of an open-ended question, but what do you feel about those that don't necessarily journal, but they kind of do the new generation of journaling, which is putting it on Facebook or Twitter instead? So the same concepts, right? They got all these thoughts in their head or whatever. But instead of putting it somewhere that's a bit more personal, they feel a certain relief when they put it on Facebook or Twitter instead. What you got to say about that, for that style of journaling?
I mean, this may be an unpopular opinion, but I cannot stand that. Like, I can't. I'm sorry, but everybody does not need to know your business. Everybody does not need to know your business. And some things are private, and some things, if you have an issue with that person, go to that person.
Go to that person.
Or talk to your close friends and get it out and whatever. But you don't need to put it on Facebook for the whole world to see. Everybody don't need to know you have a problem with your spouse or your friend or your mom or your dad. Nobody needs to know that. Like, I just don't understand why people do that. It stresses me out. I can't stand it. It's so messy.
She has journaled about this topic.
Hey, I'm so happy I asked it, bro. That's a perfect question. Perfect question.
Hey, hit the nerve. I like it. It's okay.
That part just really bothers me because I feel like in that case, that's you trying to get attention. That's not you trying to fix the situation. Mm. And then you're getting negative attention. You're not even getting the positive attention that you might be looking for. You're just getting a negative response because people are either going to tell you, one, you're being too messy. You shouldn't have done that. Or two, they're going to feed into the mess and make it like 10 times worse. You don't need everybody in your business. You don't.
Facts.
Amen, God.
Just God. Hey, look, that's so real. Like, I talk about this so much, especially to the younger folks I talk to. Younger folks. I say that like I'm an old man.
You are, bro. You're hella old.
Bro, do not remind me, bro. but no, I tell anybody, I don't care if you're young, old, whatever. Like, if it's something that is personal, just like, right, write it down. Write it down in a journal or something because...
Write a book if you want.
Bro, write a book. Because you know what happens, bro?
I experienced
this one time when I put something like super personal on Facebook, and it was really because I didn't think that people were listening to me anyway. So I put it on Facebook. I wasn't getting that many likes during this time period, years ago. Wasn't getting that many likes. So I just put it out, right? Like, put it out there, and people started commenting and like saying all this different stuff. And it blew my mind. It's almost like when you in a room and you think that nobody can see you, but then like you do something crazy, like something just outrageous, and then everybody starts like looking and pointing at you like, whoa, like I felt vulnerable in the moment. Like, you know what I mean? And it like showed me something that I was like, I'll never do that again. Like, I'll never put my all of my feelings out on social media, especially in this day and age, because everything you do is like dissected. You got people. I don't care if you said I love Jesus. Somebody going to have something bad to say about it. Like, so especially when it's, you know, of course, something personal. So amen to you, sister, for finding an outlet to still get those thoughts out. And those thoughts are actually going to be helping millions of people in this book. So looking forward to it getting in people's hands.
So I have like 1.5 more questions. I'm not going to take up your whole evening. I'm sure you probably got other things to do. But before we break apart, I know a large portion of this book, or like a lot of the motivation from this book, came from the relationship that you were in that ended. And it sounds like from the reading of the book, there were two relationships that kind of ended or what have you. Is that right? There were two relationships that were talked about in the book, or is it just the one?
Just the one?
Okay, I thought there was one earlier on, like the first one, if I'm not bugging. But either way, what I wanted to ask about was, what information, red flags, signs, thoughts did you have during that relationship that ended up coming back out or aligning with what you journaled about, thought about, felt after? Was there anything that like, oh, I knew this, I felt this, this is what was I thought, you know, or like I should have followed this gut feeling or what have you in the relationship, and then later on you ended up it coming to fruition, you ended up journaling about it, or did all the clarity come after?
No, I think when you are presented with a person, you will always know off top what the red flags are, and you can either choose to deal with it or not deal with them.
You see how spicy she's getting right now? Yo, you see the spice?
I think that's for every relationship, though. I feel like in every relationship, there's going to be some things that you don't like about the person, but you can deal with it. Like, you can handle it. And I think for me, I believed that I could handle it. And I did for a long time. I did handle it. And I feel I'm definitely not perfect in the situation, because there were a lot of things that I did wrong that I shouldn't have done either. But I think that there were red flags that I should have listened to prior. I didn't. And so I dealt with the relationship, and there were red flags in the relationship I should have listened to as well. But I didn't. And those things kind of proved to be true after the fact. So things that I thought about was like, something doesn't seem right here, came true after the fact. So they definitely could have been happening during, who knows. I think that every person is presented with situations where either you take the person for those red flags you see, or you choose not to. But you have to choose which ones you can actually deal with.
Right. I definitely want to applaud you on your level of accountability throughout the whole book and throughout this whole kind of process, just because obviously, like, you're non-confrontational. I know you in that way. But also, like, there are things that you could have addressed from a different perspective that obviously seems like you have taken a more introspective and more self-centered thought process about, which is I think it's a good thing. And I'm kind of taking all of this, the book, everything you're saying, I'm taking it all to be applicable and just like, you know, to be able to extrapolate it to anyone's life. And I think that's something that, once again, if we're talking about our generation, is something that can be super useful. Not only are we talking about red flags, which people talk about red flags on social media all the time, but we're also talking about the fact that the reality is not that you didn't see them, but the fact that you thought you could handle them. You thought that you could do away with them. You thought that you could address them. That's something that I feel like not a lot of people want to take responsibility for. People often say that, oh, I didn't see them, or that, you know, I thought it was something else. It takes a high level of accountability to say, yeah, I saw them and I love that person, so I thought I could take that. I thought I could handle that. You know, and like you said, you did handle them. Again, from reading the book, you definitely did do your part. I have a theory, and this is a little bit of a tangent, but I have a theory on relationships in our generation. I think that because a lot of people in our generation get done wrong, they don't work on or improve themselves as significant others. So if I get cheated on, it was them, they cheated, and F them, I'm great, and you move on. When reality is, you always got to try to keep improving. If that's, you know, in order to have the best relationship, you always got to continue to improve. But if somebody else does something messed up, it kind of vindicates you from whatever responsibility you had. And I think it takes a high level of self-awareness to be able to say, you know what? I know what happened to me. I know what so-and-so did, but I'm also not off the hook completely here. You know what I'm saying? Just to kind of form that into a question, is that something that it took a little while to get to, or do you feel like throughout the entire process you were pretty self-aware and pretty self-reflective on the part that you played in it? Like, did you have to grow to that, or is that kind of how it was from as it was happening?
I think just to go off what you said, I think two things that people should remember is, one, you cannot change a person unless they want to be changed. And even then, you have no rights to change that person.
I want to change.
Whether it's your husband, whether it's your husband, your boyfriend, your whoever.
Or your girlfriend.
That's why I said whoever. You can't change that person. Like, you can't go into a relationship believing that, oh, this person is going to change when we get into this relationship. Like, all these things I don't like about them is going to be gone. That's not true. You have no control over who that person is. They're still going to be who they are regardless. I can't remember the second thing right now, but I'm pretty sure it'll come back to me. But I think for me, I thought it was important to take responsibility for the parts that I played, because I can't fully blame him for everything. Like, I feel like that's unfair, especially since I know there were things in me that I didn't do right. Being it was my first relationship, I didn't really know like how to maneuver through what a relationship was. Like, I was kind of just going along as it came. And so I think I was at fault in that way, kind of a little bit, not knowing exactly what I was getting myself into. But I just think that with the attitudes I was given, I met with. Because I felt like, well, you can't talk to me that way, so I'm gonna talk to you this way too.
Reciprocation.
And I feel like it can't be a tick for tack. Like, it's a give and a take type of thing, but you guys have to work together to move towards the same direction. You can't be fighting against each other, because when you're in a relationship or when you're working towards getting married, in my mind, you're working towards working together to move forward, not fighting against each other.
Ain't that
right? That makes no sense. I watched your guys' lives the other day, you and Amber, and you had mentioned something like that. So
we did.
Agree. I was like, oh wow, that makes a lot of sense. You know, you can't fight against the person. I think a lot of people kind of go into their relationship already fighting against the person. And I think sometimes it's like a girl, and this is just me, this is what I observe. I feel like sometimes a girl can be so or let's just say me. I feel like I can be so, I assume things already. Like, mm-hmm. I believe this is going to happen, this is going to happen, this is going to happen. And I already know my response before it even happens. So I don't even give that person a chance to explain a situation, because as soon as they say one thing, oh, well, I knew, blah, 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 blah. And then you want to jump off. Like, you can't do that. So I feel like, in a way, we were both at fault, and I couldn't go out of the relationship saying, oh, it was all his fault. Like, it's not fair to blame everything on him, because there's two people in that relationship. Both people had to have done something to where it wasn't working together, because you both weren't working together in order to move forward. So I couldn't, in good conscience, blame him for everything. Facts. That didn't make no sense to me.
Wow. Come on.
That is uncommon level of informed opinion. Not a lot of people know that much. Yeah. Will, did you have something, bro? I'm sorry. I'm just taken aback by that.
I'm
that
was over here one. Just like, whoa, she getting all into my personal space. I'm just playing.
We're both married men, so we both know exactly, what you mean.
You know what I learned the other day, and this ties into what you're saying. What I learned the other day from a gentleman I was watching, he said that him and his wife, they get into petty arguments about different things. But someone told him that the goal shouldn't be who wins that argument. It should be which one of us is going to keep the peace. Rather, it's me not agreeing with you and you not agreeing with me. Let's just make sure we keep in the peace, because that's really what it boils down to. If this situation, if this topic is going to get us to such a point where I don't want to mess with you, or I don't want to see you for the rest of the night, or whatever the case might be, we both lost. Neither one of us won. I don't care whose point was right. And I was just like, whoa. So I tried it. I tried it the other day. And it was something small, and I was just like, you know what? You right. And she's like, what do you mean I'm right? I was like, dang, can't win for losing. Yeah, I was like, can't win for losing. But not. But in all seriousness, that, like you said, that takes a lot of observation and like personal like development and just really wanting to be better in relationships to see that. So mm-hmm. So big ups on you for addressing that. That's a huge thing.
Moving back into the book, I know the relationship portion of the book was, again, a big catalyst to where kind of everything ended up and things like that. It was really, like I said, vulnerable. I enjoyed that that part of it. And I think we should definitely have you back on for, please, if we ever did like a relationship topic, like dating, life, whatever kind of topic. I think you'd be great for that. But just kind of rounding out the book, because there is so much more to it than just a relationship. You have the relationship portion, you have the biblical scriptures, you have the journal entries, those types of things. Before people go grab the book, is there anything that you'd like them to take away from it? I know we did a lot. We talked about a lot. This ties into a lot. It's very applicable to a lot of different people's lives. Is there one kind of overarching thing that you'd like people to take away from the book, or to take away from you as the author, take away about the next book you're going to write? It's inevitable. You don't have a choice. Like, whatever.
Well, I'm thinking about the next book, but it may or may not happen. So don't be so excited and nothing like that. But I think from this book, what I want people to take away is, like Will was saying, we're all in a waiting season
right now.
Because of quarantine, because of the election. Like, there's so much going on right now. And I think what is important is, one, we all need to figure out exactly what our relationship with God looks like. And are we actually hearing him and what we need to be doing next? Because I feel like God is in, I just feel like in this space right now where, and I talked about this on my last Q&A, but you know how the Israelites were in that 40-year period, and because they were being disobedient, God waited till everybody was dead before he let the Israelites enter the promised land. And there are some people, right, there are some people dying because they fulfilled their purpose. They did what God needed them to do, and it was time for them to move forward on into glory. But then there are some people dying because they're not ready for what is supposed to be happening next. They're too afraid of the giants and the things that are in the next land. And so I feel like we have to pay attention to what it is God is trying to tell us. And are we listening to the few, or are we listening to the larger crowd? Because the larger crowd is the one steering us the wrong way. So I feel like we need to really hone in on what it is God is saying in this waiting season, so that we are really prepared for when the next season comes in. And I think that's what I want most people to take away, especially during this time. But I just think personally, everybody's waiting season looks different. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, I always was comparing my life to everybody else's, and how, oh, well, this is happening. Like, they're getting this, they're getting this. And here I am, 29 years old, single, childless. And what do I have to say?
Author with a house, whatever.
Right. It seems like, you know, but you know, you start to belittle those big things that are happening in your life, because you see everybody has the things that you are aspiring to have. And I feel like it's important to realize that everybody's journey is different. We're not running a sprint or running a marathon. Everybody's at different paces in their lives, and we have to respect that. We have to respect their journeys, but we also have to respect our own and realize that, you know, even though I'm in a different season than everybody else, when it comes time for me to be in the season that everybody's in, they're going to be in something else, but I'll finally get to be in that season that I was waiting for so long, and it'll be worth that whole wait. And so your waiting period could be a month, 15 years like David, or longer or shorter, whatever the case may be, but everybody's season is different, and we have to understand that it's different.
Hey, man. I'm not going to follow that. Drop the mic. I love it, man. Hey,
that was
perfect. We see nowadays that more than ever, that people come into their destiny, their purpose later and later. So, amen to that, man.
And it's no age. You can be 50 years old. I talked about this on the first podcast. You can be 50 years old, and if God call you, it's time to get going. But I think what we and. Thank you so much, Tatiana, for dropping all these gems.
Thank you.
Like, super appreciate it. I think one big thing I took from it all is that being ready. People just need to be ready. Like, whatever that looks like, people just need to stay ready. They used to tell us in football all the time, stay ready so you never have to get ready.
You got
to
get ready.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, but coach, like, but I'm not playing. I used to be that kid. Like, I'm not playing, right? Like, metaphorically, this can be used in all aspects of life. Coach, I'm not playing right now. Why do I have to be ready? Like, I'm not being used. But right. it was something that even at that age, my coach was saying, like, that I understand now, that I'm only looking at what you're doing while you're not being used, so that I know that when it's time to call in your name, that you'll be ready. And I think that's what God is doing metaphorically to all of us right now. How well are we using our time during this season of wait? So, oh my gosh, you done dropped some gems. If I had some studio applause right now, they will be going off. We've had some people in the chat. We have Miss Kamisha Bruce said, yes, baby, love you, cousin. We had Sierra Cooper said love cues in Amber's live sessions. Shout out to Tyrone. I see you on here. What up, Pops? He's on here too. We'll close it out in just a second, but I want to play a quick game. Q, we ain't never did this before, bro. I came prepared this time, bro. All right. So I want to play a really, really quick game. Here's the question. If you're quarantined on an island for a month, no, let's say for a year, which albums are you bringing with you? Which artists, which songs? You can either do albums, you can say just a general artist that you can just plug, you know, all they tracks, or what type are top three songs you bring in.
Think about this hard, because if you say the wrong thing, it's going to invalidate everything else you said.
You can. How many?
It's up to you.
We'll say three. We'll say three. We'll say three, just to keep it simple.
Well, I like to mix it up. If you've ever been in my car, I could listen to Ratchet and Gospel right behind each other. I always tell my mom, I was like, you know, Mom, because when you listen to Ratchet, you cancel it out with the gospel song.
It doesn't count.
I combated everything, you know, that they said in that Ratchet song with the gospel song coming up next. So, you know, we're good.
He's all the best but I think
right now, I have a mixture of albums and songs. So I would definitely take Kiara Shearer's new album.
Okay.
She has a new album out. It's amazing. Every song on there, she went from worship to trap to, you know, it was a lot. It was, you know, it was a lot going on. So I feel like that's a whole good little mixture right there. You said three, right?
Yeah, three.
I don't want to be judged. I don't want to be judged by you, Q.
No judge zone. Not Joseph.
If I do it, it'll be silently. I'll text you.
But right now, Brandy's B7 album.
Wow. Okay, I respect that. Okay.
I would take that because I actually really like that album.
Okay.
And then number three, let's see.
This is the one. This got to be the one.
Let's see. Oh, dang. Okay, don't laugh at me, but it'll probably be the Hamilton album, hands down.
Wow. It's some Hamilton fans listening that's applauding you right now.
I've been listening to the whole album every single day, bro. It's like, it's legit. And they got a remix album, too.
Wow. Hey, Hamilton for the win.
Yeah, that would never in my... Never.
Yeah, if it was right now, I was going to the island, those would be the three albums I would take.
She just put so many people onto so much, just bang, bang, bang. Hey.
Facts, like you literally, that's probably the best three mix. Like you have a little bit of everything in that mix. So I ain't mad at it. Q, give me your three, bro. Give me your, and you ain't got that long to respond. I'm giving you like 5 seconds.
I'm gonna do the double disc, Ready to Die.
Okay.
I'm gonna do Good Kid, Mad City.
Okay.
And I'm gonna do. Okay, I'm going to do a wild card just because nobody would ever think. I'm going to do Young Jock, New Jock City. It's a good album.
It's a good album.
Oh, nobody's heard it because he only sold like 11 copies. It's a good album. Go check it out. I'm telling you, it's a good album.
What? All right,
bro. It's a good album. I listened to the whole thing. I promise you. It's one of my favorites.
I can't mess with you no more, bro. But it's cool. We still family.
Run your three, man. Hurry up. What you got?
My three. Okay, so I don't. It's just gonna be a mix. But number one, J. Cole to warm up for sure.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm gonna just say a song that has to be there. Daniel Caesar, best part. Like, I know that's not an album, but whichever album that's on. No, you take that back. Give me Lauryn Hill, Miss Education. Just so we make sure that we still praising God, give me that Kirk Franklin Hero album, I think is what it's called. The one that had Imagine Me Being Free.
Yeah.
Whatever that album is, I need that one. It got the hits, it got the cuts, and I'm cool.
You know what? I think I'm going to switch my last one for Big Crit Catalactica.
Okay. Okay.
I never heard that album.
Oh, it's amazing. I'm going to listen to yours. You're going to listen to mine. Deal?
Okay.
I'm going to do that. Hamilton right now. I'm going to go listen to Hamilton. Yeah.
You got to listen to Hamilton and the remix album, okay?
And it's a remix album?
It's a remix Hamilton album, and I promise you, it's so bomb. It got, Queen Latifah, Miguel, Sia. Who else? Shanti, Ja Rule.
What?
Nas.
What's like, happening?
It's dope.
Bro, how are we sleeping on that, bro? I literally
they got the instrumentals on here.
I was sleeping on it too, and I was like, "Dang, I didn't even know about this."
Oh yeah, I'm going crazy.
Hey, you got somebody in the comments, my big cuzzo Joe McPherson. He said it's a good album, no lie. I did own it, LOL. And you know me on music, cuzzo. He's a big music fan, so
he's I don't know if he's New talking Jack about City.
What's up.
He's talking about New Jack City. I'm telling you, it's a good album. Go listen to it. It's an honorable mention.
I think he might be talking about Hamilton. I wouldn't be surprised if he's talking about the Hamilton album. He surprises me sometimes. Shout out to my bro Bishop. He and I wish we can just bring people on. Like we'll have a whole party. But Tatiana, I won't keep you for too long. You've been incredible. We definitely need you back on the show. We're most likely going to be doing a segment where we just talk about relationships, and I would love to have a bunch of different views. So from a married person view to a single person view to somebody that's in the waiting period view, whatever it looked like, whatever the status looked like, I would love to have a conversation with that. So if you're down for it, you are always welcome. This is now your home, the When We Relate podcast. Anything you want to promote, we got you. We got you.
Yes, I'll definitely come on again. This is fun.
I love it.
Shout out your social media so everybody can like, comment, follow.
Oh, right. So you can follow me on Snap, Instagram, Twitter. I don't tweet that much, but you can follow me on Twitter and Facebook, all under Tatiana Renee.
That's famous people stuff. When you got everything is the same. That's famous people stuff, boy.
You got to pay for
it's
that, bro.
It's happening that way. It's happening that way.
All right. Well, thank you again. Thank you for joining us. We loved having you. I love the book. Everybody go get it. It is tagged in all the posts that I shared. I'll post it again when I repost this. And when we'll post this to all the streaming platforms, Tidal, Apple Music, what have you, we'll make sure to mention it and link it there. Thank you for, sharing your life with us, being vulnerable with us and relating with us. We'd love to have you back. Anything further, my brother?
Hey, man, I think you hit it right on the nail. For all the listeners out there, everybody that came on Facebook Live, I'm having a little technical difficulties with my camera. I didn't even know what's happening. I'm like doing the robot on the low key on Facebook from what I understand, but appreciate everybody jumping on. This has been an incredible time. When We Relate podcast, if you want to join us for the show, if you got a small business, if you got a book, if you just want to have a conversation, I don't care what it is, hit me in my DMs, Will_inspire. Or if you're on Facebook and you're watching live, feel free to shoot me a message. Our platform is open to everybody. We say it all the time, but When We Relate podcast, this is a podcast for people like you and me to talk about life, music, sports, and everything in between. I am your host, Will Inspire. Peace. Hey, thank you for listening to the show. I honestly, truly, truly, truly do appreciate you taking the time out to listen to my thoughts, listen to these conversations. And honestly, without you guys, without you actually taking the time out to listen, this show would be nothing. Truly, it would be just me talking to myself. So I got a huge favor that I want to ask you. I know we're just now getting to know each other, even if we knew each other for a while. Act like we're just not getting to know each other. Here's the thing. In order for this show to reach the goals that we honestly want it to reach, like I want this show to hit millions, millions, millions of people. But more importantly, I want that right person, that one person that really need that extra push, that extra encouragement to listen in on the show and hopefully change the scope of their entire life. So with that said, whether you're listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iTunes and podcasts, they're the same. Wherever you're listening to, this podcast, okay? I need you to subscribe. I need you to share this. I need you to like it. I need you to write a review. If you heard something that we talked about that you honestly loved and it helped you in some type of way or sparked something in you, leave that into the review section. I'm a regular podcast listener myself, so I know the first thing I do is I pull up a podcast, and sometimes, I'm not going to lie, I jump on to see how many reviews they have, who's reviewing them, what people are saying, because I want to make sure this is what I want to listen to. So again, in order for that to be the same for a new listener, it's going to take somebody like you. Yes, you listening right now. So hop on, subscribe. I appreciate you guys. I love you guys. And let's continue to support each other. Let's get it.